newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money.
Welcome to the Media Project, an inside look at media coverage of current events. Hi, I'm Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. I am filling in today for Rex Smith. With us is Barb Lombardo, former editor of the Saratogian and now an adjunct professor at the University of Albany, as well as Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. Great to be with you guys.
Nice to see you. Where have you guys been? I've come here every week and there's nobody in the studio. You changed the time of the taping for me.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Hey, let's talk about FBI Director Kash Patel suing The Atlantic, accusing it of defamation over an article that it published this week claiming his excessive drinking and unexplained absences were putting his job in jeopardy. It didn't take long for this lawsuit to land in court, although he has threatened many times before. What do you think the outlook for this lawsuit is, and what do you think the objective was?
Well, I think that's two different paths there. One is that the objective is to scare people and create a chilling effect among the journalists who cover the FBI and the administration, and that they want them to be more careful, and those who are fearful of a story that they may have might not print it if they think there's a chance they're going to be sued. That said, the chances of this lawsuit being victorious are slim and none. I can't imagine that a publication like The Atlantic didn't vet this story in every corner of the story, and I don't believe that there's any way that this story would meet the test of malice. So I think he's got to do something. If he doesn't protest and if he doesn't sue, he's admitting defeat, and they'll sue and it'll get thrown out.
Yeah, the article cited more than two dozen anonymous sources and included allegations that Mr. Patel's conduct had often alarmed officials at the FBI and the Department of Justice. The article also said he had earned a reputation for acting impulsively during high-stakes investigations. You know, in any event, in some respects, the lawsuit gave more legs to the story.
That always happens.
Right. And
I think more attention to it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ira, that if he did nothing, then it's accepting that it was the truth. So he has to punch back. I think there's a challenge for journalism with this lawsuit because you have to be able to then prove that these unnamed sources were saying something real, that you know these are serious allegations. We sitting here all want to believe that this was carefully vetted. But the public, I think, would want to know, where did this information come? Was it somebody's opinion? Were there documents? Were there breathalyzer tests? What documentation do they have besides somebody's opinion that they think that he was drunk? I think that's a problem. And because lawsuits tend to end up getting settled, the answers to these questions may never come out. So then the question to me becomes, does this go all the way? Does it get dismissed and then it's gone right away, which is a good thing? Or does it proceed? And then if you end up with a settlement, the details never come out.
You know, among the sources apparently were hospitality personnel. So I would imagine these would be bartenders, waitresses, people who worked at some of these exclusive clubs at which he allegedly drank to excess. But the discovery phase of this will be interesting. If the lawsuit goes forward, it's possible that it could be dismissed from the get-go. In a case like this, with a high-profile person, you have to prove actual malice and that the reporter knew the things he was reporting or she was reporting were false and reported them anyway. I mean, it is a high bar, but it is a bar that the Supreme Court has indicated it would love to dissect at some point in the future. So that could be the danger. Maybe Kash Patel thinks he could be the case that brings us all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, there's no doubt that, as Barbara mentioned, the fact that there are anonymous sources weakens your case. You want to have all your sources on the record, but sometimes it's impossible to get a story without offering anonymity. And when that happens, you go with it and you hope that your reputation as a journalistic organization follows you along and people will believe what you wrote.
All right. And now it's time for us to talk about a problem I have every year about this time, and that's the White House Correspondents Association annual dinner. I hate it. I think it's bad, and I think it's especially bad this year because they are setting themselves up to get trounced by the administration that hates them. Now, our program airs on Friday, the day before the dinner, which is Saturday, and on Sunday, the day after. So we will either seem like fools who didn't know what we were talking about, or we will be dead on in our analysis of what's going to happen. And I can tell you, I think it will be a disaster. About 200 journalists and a group of journalistic societies have issued a letter asking for at least something from the podium from someone in authority to denounce what the administration has done to press freedom in this country during the first year and a half of Donald Trump's second term. They have gone so far as to threaten to wear lapel pins and pocket squares that say First Amendment, which I think, two famous names on this petition, Sam Donaldson and Dan Rather, showed up. Glad to see they're still out there and kicking. But the other thing that's so frustrating to me is they've decided not to hire a comedian, and they're going to have a magician of sorts.
A mentalist.
A mentalist, yes, because I think that they do not want to offend the current president. So, what do you all think? Have you come around to my way of thinking on this?
Oh, we've been there for a long time, and I'll speak for myself. We've been very critical on this program, not specifically what this event may turn out to be because of Trump's inclusion, but the whole notion of the press or a committee of press people like in Albany, the Albany Legislative Correspondents, hosting a dinner from which you have to go to the subjects of your stories, solicit money for tickets to buy a table, and the whole thing stinks. The public doesn't want to see us breaking bread with politicians. They want to see us covering them fairly and accurately. And these dinners are an anathema.
I had a somewhat different take on this because I've come around on this particular one for this particular White House Correspondents' Dinner. I think that it's important for people to know that reporters and editors are human beings, and so are politicians, and that there should be, in an ideal world, the times where you're working as adversaries, maybe because you're coming at things from different angles, but that as people, then you can put down your work and get along with people with all the other things they have in common, sports, families, movies, just people as people, that you can let your hair down and just commiserate with people. The Legislative Correspondents Association event in Albany, it's not like it's some hard-hitting, terrible thing. There's camaraderie among the people who are participating in it.
They have a skit every year, and usually the skit pokes fun at the incumbent governor. I mean, is the incumbent governor funny or not?
We'll see how good the show is. But here's how I feel about the White House dinner. I am disgusted, dismayed, disheartened. First, I saw that I was going to call up Judy, and I decided to wait till today and just say, you were right. Like, why in the world would the journalists want to bring somebody into their midst who hates them, has declared hatred, has encouraged the whole country to hate them, has said that they're fake, is suing them left and right? If you were having a party in your neighborhood, you would not invite the neighbor who has sued you, hates you, is ganging up against you, he wants to destroy you. This is absolutely crazy.
They naively think that if they give them a talking to and to explain to them the First Amendment, maybe they'll come around. You know, not so. Historically, I thought, well, what a great country we live in, that you can get up in front of the President of the United States and make fun of him, and because we have our right to do that. That's fun. That's not what this is anymore. Donald Trump is going to be given the stage, and he is not going to be nice. The jokes aren't going to be funny.
Was he the mentalist you're referring to?
And it's really not even a gathering of reporters. It's 10 to 1. The ratio of celebrities and executives to reporters is 10 to 1. It's not like it's a reporter gathering. And what reporter do you know that has an evening gown that they can pull out of the closet?
And that's not even the point, as you know, as you have said.
The White House correspondents let this thing get out of hand long before Trump got involved, because because of what you were just alluding to. Somehow or other, this became an Oscars event where there's a red carpet and they interview people coming in and what are you wearing? And then the celebrities would be solicited by news organizations to sit at their table. It just went on and on for over the years. It ran itself amok, and in a way, Trump did a favor by not accepting it to prior dinners. But now, to your question, Barbara, what is the answer? Why do they invite him? They know what they're going to get. It's going to be a bloodbath. Why is he there?
Yeah, and not only that it's going to be bad, why would you want to do it in the first place? And you're right, we use the word naive, Judy. Maybe we keep letting ourselves get, speaking of the media, get bashed over and over again and think there's going to be a different outcome or to show that we could be civilized to one another. No matter what the outcome of that event is, it shouldn't be happening.
Hang on. I've been hiding in the back of the studio here, guys. This is your producer, David Gustina.
Wow, where were you?
Yeah, you're missing the historically significant part of all this, which was it was Donald Trump who was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner in 2011 when Obama was the president, and Seth Meyers made fun of him, as did Obama. And that is when the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, turned, got angry, and decided to run for president. And you can see how he feels about journalism right now when you look at this White House Correspondents' Dinner with a mentalist and not a comedian, because part of what we're supposed to be able to do in a democracy is make fun of the president of the United States. And a president who believes in democracy and wants to preserve democracy should have the maturity level to be made fun of and accept it.
And, you know, I wonder, too, whether anybody outside our circle of journalists really gives a hoot about this thing.
No.
I was eager to talk about it and interested in it. Most people, I think, won't understand the whole brouhaha or won't care about it.
So the time has come for us to mention that we need to say goodbye to Ira Fussfeld today.
The show just started.
You know, today is the last show that Ira's going to be part of.
Why am I hearing about this now?
Well, and Ira has really always offered us the publisher's perspective that, you know, us editors sometimes overlook.
You got to get those editors in line.
Yes. Ira has journeyed all the way up from God knows where in the Hudson Valley. And it's a long haul, and so he's not going to do it. But you've been doing it. When did you start doing media projects?
I've been doing this about 30 years. We haven't quite figured out exactly when that starts, but I was on every other week for about 30 years.
And who was the host at the beginning?
Well, at the beginning, it was Rex, I think. I've lost track of the timing, but I actually was on the program before Rex got on when Alan Chartok did the program with a fellow named Gary Fryer, who was the press secretary for Mario Cuomo. And sadly, Gary Fryer suffered a fatal illness and was off the program. And for a time, Alan was doing the show by himself, and it was more or less an interview show.
The media project.
Yes, and then the panel evolved. So I'm leaving now because as you point out, I've been bringing the publisher's perspective, but I've been retired for about 12 years now, and I feel less confident in speaking the publisher's language because the industry has changed so much. I don't feel I'm quite on top of it as I once was. So it's been a great run. I've also had some health issues which have limited my travel time, but it's been a great run, and I'm going to miss it. I'm going to continue to listen. I work with some great people, certainly the current Barbara and Judy and Rex Smith, who is unfortunately not here today. But I've also worked with people like Rosemary Armeo and Lydia Kulbita and Elisa Streeter and Mike Spain and Stu Shinsky and Miles Reed and Liz Benjamin. I suspect I'm missing some people. And of course, David has been the glue that keeps this program together and puts us all in line. And then finally, Alan, who was nice enough to invite me to be on the program. And we spent a lot of time on the air joking about his height and my weight. So
we sure did.
So I'm going to miss it, but I appreciate it all. And I've received a lot of kind words from listeners, particularly because I haven't been on in about 4 months now, and people have been asking where I am. Well, now I'm here, so you're stuck with me for another 20 minutes.
I'm happy to see you here today in the studio, and I'm going to miss your participation in the roundtable and especially on the media project, getting to know you here. You and I go back a long, long ways under the same leadership of newspaper owners, and we don't have to go down that path, except that you were the publisher in Kingston, and I was the editor in Saratoga, and I always had a great deal of respect for you and what you were doing with Kingston, how you were a good role model of how to negotiate. You know, publishers got a tough job, and you were a good buffer for your staff, supporter of your staff, and kept the corporate people at bay as best as you could. And you've always been somebody of the highest integrity, and
I really appreciate that.
You know, that's one of the trends in local newspapers. There are fewer publishers out there. You know, when you gather a group, you've got just one publisher instead of seven publishers out there in the community. I mean, how many Rotary dinners and luncheons did you go to, Ira?
Yeah, so that's why I gained all that weight. Well, you know, the current publisher of my old newspaper, I've never met him. I'm not insulted by it, but it speaks to the fact that he's a publisher based in Boston who is a publisher of newspapers in New York and elsewhere.
Can I ask you, Ira, an important question on a big issue? What do you think about the canopies, the awnings in Kingston?
I'm very happy about it. It's not a media issue, but for those who don't know, Kingston put about, 30 years ago, an architectural display in the Uptown Kingston Business District.
So you don't get wet while you're shopping along the street.
That's been the major advantage. But at any rate, because this is the media show, I'm very happy that they're doing it. It was done well. But that Uptown part of Kingston is going to be beautiful when the new signage is in.
All right. What's your advice to local newspapers going forward? And what do you think the outlook is for them?
Well, I'm not the only one who's predicted the death of print. I just think there's still time for it to exist and to do good work. But journalism is journalism. You have to be fair. You have to be honest. You have to be accurate. And whether the results of your efforts are going to be in print or they're going to be on the air or they're going to be digital, the goal should be the same. The one thing that really bothers me these days, and it sounds like a sour grapes, is that anybody not only can be a journalist, but can have more, notoriety than the traditional journalist. I worked a long time to get to the place where I could write a column and have my name in the paper. And now all you have to do is set up shop with a podcast and you're a journalist. And many of the people who purport to be journalists have no idea what journalism is all about. And that's not all of them. There are a lot of good people out there, but it bothers me that the people who train to do this business are less thought of than they ought to be.
Less talented in many ways, too. It's like the old adage, you know, when Hollywood was filled with actors and singers and, you know, people with real talent, not the housewives of San Jose.
Right. And it used to be that reporters or journalists were vetted by their media organizations, but now you don't need a media
Anybody can be a journalist as long as you have a laptop. And there's something good about that. There's something democratic about that. But it does give less notoriety to people who work their entire lives to earn that notoriety.
Now, you were an early user of TikTok among us.
Yes, love TikTok.
Are you still finding that it's valuable for you?
It's not valuable at all. It's junk, but it's entertaining. It's like I sit there. I still read 7 newspapers a day, either in print or online. I usually don't turn on the TV until the middle of the day, or else I'd be mesmerized by that. But I will go to TikTok, and before I know it, I'm on for an hour, and all you're doing is strolling through clips. I can tell you in 90 different ways how to make a pastrami sandwich at Katz's Deli, because they're all the time you're going to see that. And the algorithms are such that it sees what the kind of stuff that I'm watching and keeps feeding them to me.
Yes, and the scientists are calling it brain rot.
Yeah,
now, Ira.
I don't doubt it. It's junk. I'm the first to admit it, but it's entertaining.
There's no news in that feed of yours?
Not really. That's a funny thing. I see people say they get their news from TikTok. I don't get my news from TikTok. I don't see the news in TikTok. It's all entertainment.
Well, I got to tell you guys, I'm glad Rex is not here right now. He'd be very upset with you, Ira. And the fact is, he's very upset that he's not here. And he went to a great deal to make sure that last week he had an opportunity to share his thoughts about you and your tenure here on the program. And, you know, we've all been, you know, this little family for so long, and we all care about one another. I think it's fair to say. I won't say I love you, Ira, but I love you, Ira. And here's what Rex had to say.
Well, I appreciate having a chance to say something here, pre-recorded, since I can't be in the studio for the show, but since Ira has let it be known that this will be his last visit to the Media Project, I just had to slip in a few words, even though I'm not here just now as you're listening. The Media Project began, you know, in 1995, and I've been here for most of the programs over those years. And many people have sat at these microphones, perhaps a dozen who would be considered by our loyal listeners as regulars on the cast, journalists who were here for some years. Nobody in that group, I have to say, offered more consistently thoughtful and wise commentary than Ira Fussfeld. Now, Ira's different from most of us on the show because he straddled both sides of the journalism world, both the gathering and dissemination of the news on one hand, and on the other, the business of supporting that work. That is, he was an editor who became a publisher. Regular listeners know that Ira started as a sports writer. You may not know that he had a path toward following that career, going to the big city, you know, and to the thrill of covering major league sports. But he chose instead to stay in Kingston, New York, at the Daily Freeman, where he became city editor, and then publisher, the boss, of both the newspaper and some affiliated publications in the Mid-Hudson Valley. That commitment to local journalism made a difference. Ira served his community by bringing his thoughtful attention to the work at the Daily Freeman, and I have no doubt that because of his steadfast leadership, the newspaper endured and held to its mission as many others failed. It's not that Ira's enterprise didn't suffer the decline that has marked every legacy outlet since the digital revolution began. I'd say it's that Ira's commitment to honest storytelling never wavered. He fought the good fight, and his community is better because of that. And likewise, the listeners of WAMC have been lucky to have the benefit of Ira's candor and insight on the roundtable in the mornings and here on the Media Project. You know, usually when people leave these programs, there's not a big deal made of it. We just eventually notice that their voices aren't here anymore. But we couldn't let Ira slip away like that. We had to say, as I do here, thank you, Ira, for your commitment to truth-telling in your community and here with us for these many years. Enjoy your retirement.
Here, here.
Here, here, here.
Well, that's very
well done,
nice.
Rex.
I'll have to tell my wife to dig that up for my eulogy.
Always the wit.
Ira, if I could pop this bottle of champagne right now, we'd be having some, but I can't.
What are you, Cash Patel?
there we go.
For Ira, a little champagne.
Fanciest bathroom and, Dixie cups we could
indeed.
Find.
And I will just say that I remember, and I wrote this to you, Ira, I remember being with Alan at the State University of New York at New Paltz for one of his classes, and what happened? But the door opened, and in comes this guy. His name is Ira. So who's this guy? And he starts to talk, and quickly I realized, I like him a lot. And the next thing you know, he's doing the show, and little by little, over these years, Ira, we formed this relationship where after the show, I take you into the studio, and I complain about everything, and you just say, hey, you'll get through it. Don't worry about it. And truthfully, I want to say thank you, because every single time you've been at this place, you've given your all, you've cared about this radio station, in addition to the quality of journalism that we produce. And you are irreplaceable.
Well, I don't think that's true, but if I drink this champagne that you've just kindly gave me, they may pull me over on the way home tonight. So.
Well, then you'll have to stay here. We've got a place right out front. You can stay.
Here's to Ira.
Here, here, Ira.
Here, here,
here, here,
here, here. For he's a jolly good fellow.
And we won't sing.
Which nobody can deny, which nobody can deny. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Which nobody can deny.
Well, that's all the time we have this week. Thanks to Barb Lombardo and Ira Fussfeld. I'm Judy Patrick. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and to all of you for being here. Be sure to join us next week for another edition of The Media Project.
Which nobody can deny. Which nobody can deny. Which nobody can deny. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, which nobody can deny.
She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, hold the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.